The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Five dads, 5,000 kilometres, one rowing boat to cross the Atlantic to remember one daughter, Saoirse O'Driscoll, because Saoirse passed away last April at the age of 13 as a result of congenital heart disease, and now her dad John is setting out to row across the Atlantic with four others to raise money for two charities. Now, to hear all about this, about an extraordinary journey they're planning, and to hear Saoirse's story, we're joined by three of the team, John O'Driscoll, who's Saoirse's dad, Enda McNicholas and Dara Kelly. Good morning, men, and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Pat.
What an extraordinary endeavour you're embarking on, and we'll hear about the challenge and how ready you all are in a moment, but it's all about Saoirse, John.
Yeah, thanks again, Pat, for having us on today. My part of the story anyway, as I say to the guys, we have a personal narrative why we're doing this, and we have a collective, and the collective narrative is in memory of Saoirse. We started the journey about 2 years ago, it was started out as Saoirse was going to be part of the charity, the reason why we're raising money for charity. But when she passed away, the guys came to me soon after she passed and said, John, if you can't complete this role, we're happy to do it in Saoirse's name and continue on the journey. After careful consideration, Pat, myself and my wife decided it would be a good thing for us to proceed and for me to take on the journey.
Now, I want to hear about Saoirse, because it seems that she was an inveterate fundraiser anyway.
Yeah.
She was the life and soul, by all accounts.
Yeah, I suppose fundraising came out of myself and Aoife's need, Saoirse's mum, to be able to give back somehow. When you're dealing with a child, any kind of illness at all, I suppose the limits of your ability to help is down to caring for them at home and giving them a lovely, nurturing household. So very early on, I seen a picture one day of Saoirse with a cat. And I said to my wife at the dinner table, wouldn't it be lovely if we did a charity calendar featuring children with heart conditions that we could raise money for Heart Children Ireland? And that's how the process began. I mean, Saoirse was maybe 3 years of age. She was involved in that. You know, she would be in the calendar herself. She would organise other kids to be in the calendar. She would love the photo shoot every year and getting prepared for it, and then helping us distribute the calendar. So she's very much involved in the charity and the fundraising, raising over €460,000 to date with that calendar.
That's an extraordinary achievement. How young was Saoirse when you realised that she had a heart problem?
So at our 20-week scan in Holles Street, and you know, novice parents, we went in for our first scan, excited about the prospects of being new parents. And we realised at that scan that things weren't the way they should be. We were asked to leave the room and come back in to see another doctor. We had the professor come down and scan Aoife, and they realised then that it was the formation of the heart wasn't correct. Immediately, I think it was the next day, we were in Crumlin. We saw Dr. McMahon in Crumlin, who did a further scan to reveal a very serious congenital heart disease, something we weren't expecting at all.
Do they suspect that maybe she mightn't make it at all?
Yeah, it was very much said to us that the condition was so severe. The expectancy of Saoirse to make full term in pregnancy was, there was a slim chance she mightn't make full term in pregnancy. If she did make full term, we were told probably be a C-section delivery. Even if at that point, it would be within 12 to 24 hours, she'd have major heart surgery. So that was our first expectation of being parents. We were even brought into Crumlin and we saw the ICU with other children in there to get us prepared for what was ahead of us, you know, to try and prepare us for the journey.
Now, she came through all of that and you had Saoirse for 13 years, which is fantastic. But how limited was her life as a result of her condition?
Yeah, in the early years, her life was, I suppose, somewhat normal. She was able to contend with her peers. She did dance for a little while when she was younger. So she had a very happy, normal life outside of her heart condition. I mean, it was limiting from the point of view that once a year we were in hospital for some catheterization. Saoirse had over 40 surgeries, I would say, in 13 years of her life. Some of those which we would call non-invasive in the cath lab, and obviously major heart surgery and lung surgery. So as she got bigger, the constraints and the ability for her heart to perform the way it should do.
A bigger body to move around.
Exactly. It became more complicated for Saoirse. And Saoirse, in general terms, if you saw her, you wouldn't think she had a heart condition. And we used to call it at home the hidden disability. She was quite tall for a child with a heart condition. She loved her food, you know. And these are the kind of traits for young children that have severe heart conditions, that they can grow up to be a little bit smaller than their peers. They can be a little bit weaker because of the heart to support their growth. And Saoirse didn't have some of those normal traits. And that in itself was a difficulty, because getting people to see that she had a very severe life-limiting condition wasn't apparent to everybody.
Now, obviously, she became quite ill before her sad passing. There was the prospect maybe of a transplant?
Yeah. So we always knew that after our first stage of surgery, what they invariably try to do with children with heart conditions is they try and manage your own heart for as long as possible. Yeah. When you make the decision to go down the route of heart transplant, if you're a suitable candidate, it is a route that you take, but there's no coming back from. And what I mean by that is, when that transplant is done, if rejection happens, there are very little alternative options. So it's considered very carefully about what particular route somebody takes, and that being try to manage your own heart as much as possible. So back in October of last year, we looked at doing a procedure called the Fontan, and it was discovered that Saoirse wouldn't have been suitable for the Fontan. She took on well in February, and when we went into hospital, we started then exploring the possibility of a heart transplant. We were told very early days that the UK had reviewed her file and they were happy to proceed with the procedure itself. Unfortunately, when Saoirse died on the 16th of April, it was only the previous Thursday that she was actually put on the emergency transplant list. So that was only like 6 days before she passed.
The loss of Saoirse is phenomenal, but what you're doing now in her name is going to keep her alive for all of those who knew her. This particular challenge, John, how did that come about?
The particular challenge, like as I said, we had been involved in a charity calendar, and back in the 40th anniversary of the Dublin City Marathon, Saoirse asked me to push her in the marathon. So she was always a bit adventurous in some of the initiatives that she wanted to do. And I felt that Saoirse was always my superhero, Pat, and I wanted to do something, I suppose, that, you know, made Saoirse look at me in that way. You know, I could teach her something by doing an epic challenge that maybe gave her some hope that there's always light at the end of the tunnel. One of our other teammates that couldn't be here today gave me a book about a rowing across the Atlantic. And I felt that there was a lot of similarities in the challenge of rowing the Atlantic and somebody with congenital heart disease. Now, although it's so vastly different, at the end of the day, rowing an ocean is full of so many unknowns, and Saoirse's life was full of so many unknowns. There were so many things, there was only a limited amount of things that we could do for Saoirse. So in many ways, the journey across the Atlantic kind of mirrored that, and I thought it would be a nice way to recognise the trials and tribulations of her life by putting myself through something very difficult.
Now, obviously, you built up a bit of muscle when you were pushing Saoirse around the marathon course, which must have been an epic endeavour. But rowing across the Atlantic is of a different quality, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think it's something that none of us have really experienced before. Yeah. And even sitting here today, although it's a week away from us going to La Gomera for the start of the race, we have very limited knowledge to some extent about what's facing us on this challenge. Mm. So yeah, it's going to be a very difficult one.
Well, we better get some details of the challenge itself. Enda, what do you know about what lies ahead?
The biggest part of it, I think, is the unknown, Pat, is what we know.
But I mean, how fit are you guys now?
We're as fit as we can possibly be. We've been training for nearly 2 years at this stage. We're training 7 days a week. We're in the gym 3 days a week, and we're rowing of those 7 days a week as well. Anything from half marathon to a marathon.
That's on a machine, is it?
On an erg, yes, is the rowing machine. Each of us have a rowing machine, both in our houses, but we also train in the gym together.
Okay. So can you outline the actual challenge? Where you start from, how long it's going to take, how much food is on board, and how you're going to manage?
Sure. It's a 5,000 kilometer row. It starts in the Canary Islands in a small island off the coast of Tenerife called La Gomera. I think one of the biggest challenges we'll face in this, and again, it's quite unknown because all of our rowing at this stage has been coastal in the Irish Sea. We could always see the Irish coast. I think one of the biggest challenges we'll face is we won't see land after one of the islands after about 2 days.
Now, when you're talking about the Canary Islands, you're thinking of winter sunshine and so on, but you'll be rowing across the Atlantic in the middle of winter. Dara?
It's actually going to be quite warm, except if we hit storms, we're going to get wet. Waves could be up to 20 metres in height. We have no idea what that's going to be like.
Have you got sea legs from other experiences yet?
Just really coastal stuff out around Dalkey, out around Hoth. So it's a huge difference, you know.
I think if I have to name some of the challenges, the first few days is about adaptation to life on the boat. And it's a very small boat. It is 8.2 metres long.
Okay.
We're five big guys, approximately 6 foot and beyond each. We're fit, but we're not that small. I think the hardest part we have to get into is adapting to life on the boat, which is daily food. So each of us have packed. It is a race at the end of the day. So we've packed a mandatory 55 days worth of food, 5,000 calories per day for each of us.
What form does that food take?
It's dehydrated food. So expedition meals, they're called.
Yeah.
So
each and of us, how will you create fresh water?
There's a water maker on the boat, so every day one of the daily chores on the boat is to desalinate 50
enough
litres.
Water to do your whatever you need to do.
Exactly.
Okay, so you've got 55 days of food on board. How many days is it going to take?
We would be hoping for sub 30 would be lovely. Realistically, it all depends on the weather, but somewhere between 30 and 40 days, but closer to that 30 mark.
Now,
nice.
There are probably experts, John, everywhere who'll tell you what not to do and what to do. And you could probably Google Transatlantic Rowing Challenge and get a lot of advice from people. What sort of stuff are you hearing about how tough this is going to be?
Yeah, look, I suppose we're all very practical guys. We're all self-employed people. And I think that the tone that we've taken on this is that we take on board certain advice and we prepare ourselves as well as we can. And then we face the challenges like everybody else when it comes to it. I think you can overcomplicate the situation by worrying about the what-ifs, buts and maybes. All we can control at this point in time is our physical well-being, our mental well-being, and how well we execute our rowing going across the ocean.
Now, when you think of a rowboat, you think of an open rowboat, but I'm sure yours is not an entirely open rowboat.
It's probably 60% open with some two small cabins either end, very small cabins.
Is it capsize proof?
Yes, if the doors are closed, it'll self-right itself. And the idea is we'll spend very little time in the cabin. So we're a boat of five. We'll row three up at all times and we'll do a 2 hour, 46 minute rowing session with a 2 hour rest period. And that will happen 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We'll get up every 2 hours and get on the rowing and continue on with the race. Like, I recently told a story to some parents who asked me about the race, and they said, what time every evening do you get off onto the ship for a sleep? And I said, this is completely unassisted. There is no other ship around. Yeah. If something happens to us, God forbid, we're probably 12 to 24 hours away from rescue.
Okay, but you have emergency beacons and
yes,
all of that.
Yeah,
on radio.
Yep, radio, sat phone. We carry a life raft. We have everything to last us at sea should we need it. But please God, we have a safe crossing.
We're clipped on the whole time. So
okay.
We're attached to the boat 100%.
And the boat cannot sink, Titanic.
There were the famous words that were said.
But, but the idea is if the boat was to flip or whatever, you're hooked on. If the you'll be tethered to the boat no matter what.
Yes.
That's correct.
Unless you release yourselves and get into
One of the nuances about rowing a fiberglass boat that far across the ocean is that we sleep on Kevlar matting, which is to protect us from swordfish who attack the boat. And it's happened on occasion where I think two ladies last year had to, they got a hole in the boat from a swordfish and they had to seal the hole with a bottle of champagne they brought for celebrating the crossing. So, yeah, there's a few nuances that happen. We're hoping that we don't see those on our journey.
Sometimes it's just too much information.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right, so you're setting off. You mentioned it's a race. Who's racing against you besides the clock?
There's 38 other teams from 17 countries across the world. So we all meet on the 1st of December in an island called La Gomera, which is off Tenerife. And it's actually where Christopher Columbus actually sailed from, when he was going to discover the Americas.
And will you all, by and large, follow the same course?
We all will end up in the same place, but we will, after we have waypoints when we leave, within a couple of days, we're in the wide Atlantic and we'll go north or south. So we could be a few hundred miles away from someone on the furthest north or furthest south, southerly.
Initially, you will see each other.
Initially.
But then,
and then you will scatter
to the Atlantic's
big. Exactly. And because we are in big seas, somebody could be a mile away and you wouldn't see them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in big swells, you're part of the ocean. You will go up and down with the ocean. So you won't have visibility for anybody within a short distance even.
I can imagine our listeners are saying, are you mad or what?
There's probably a little bit of that, Pat. Yeah, definitely. I think you have to be a little bit special to want to take on something like this. But there is a higher power driving us now.
Sure.
There's a bigger cause here behind this. And as I said, the collective here is to do this in Saoirse's memory, to raise a lot of money for two deserving charities and to raise awareness about organ donation. I know there's been big strides in the country to have an organ donation program where people have to opt out, and that will be fantastic someday.
Yeah.
But right now we have a bigger requirement than the number of people who are organ donors. So if we can help change one or two of these things by doing this role, it'll be...
Well, you're certainly going to get the profile, and you're also fundraising and you have corporate sponsors to help out. So your target is ambitious, but already exceeded.
Yes, already exceeded. And it's important for the listeners to know that we've self-funded the expedition ourselves. So all the money raised will go to the charity partners. So we've all made the financial commitment at the start of this race that we will fund any incidentals that have to be bought or travel, all those things. So that's covered by the team. So again, every penny raised, 100% of the funds will be given to charity.
And remind us who those charities are.
So the first charity is Heart Children Ireland, who's been very supportive to me and Saoirse and our family over the 13 years of our life, and help a lot of young children. And the second one is the Heart Centre in Crumlin's Children's Hospital. They're our two charity partners.
All right. Now, we have three of the team here. Who are the other two?
We have Roger McMorrow, who's a doctor in Holles Street, actually. He's an anaesthetist. And we have Conor McCarthy. The guys unfortunately couldn't be here with us today.
Okay, but there'll be five of you sharing the rowing jobs. What did you say, 2.75 hours on?
Yes.
And a couple of hours sleep and then back on again?
2 hours off, yeah, and back on again. We'll row roughly around between 720 and 760 hours each crossing the Atlantic.
Well, I can only wish the best. You're going to say something, Enda?
I suppose that's one of the biggest parts of it, Pat, is like, you know, it's life on the boat is attrition, both on the body, but also things like sleep deprivation and trying to adapt into, you know, seasickness, sleep deprivation.
And pooing in a bucket and things like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yes.
the vulgarisms that will occur.
We're looking for a sponsor for the bucket, Pat.
Okay, if people want to help out, is there a website to which they can contribute?
Yeah, we have teampower1.com, and that's the number one. So you can go to the website there and then that'll redirect you to our iDonate page. You'll also have the ability through the website to contact us if you want to consider coming on as a corporate sponsor. And I'd like to say a big thank you to all the sponsors we've had to date, from individuals to corporates. And the country has been so kind and blessed to be part of a nation that's so giving.
Hmm. Well, I've no doubt Saoirse will be proud of you. What an incredible thing to do. John O'Driscoll, who's Saoirse's dad, Enda McNicholas and Dara Kelly, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.